Welcome back. Another episode of Inside Boxing in Your Life. I am Dan Canobio. He is the champ, Chris Algieri. We're presented by PPV.com, Uncrowned, Yahoo Sports. You know the deal. We got a busy weekend coming up with some fights over in Las Vegas. Laurent Roach takes on William Zepeda. Vacant WBC title. That's on DAZN and TNT. That's going to be a good. I don't see how that won't be a banger of a fight. We have some news with the Ali Act, an update there, including Nico Ali Walsh. And then we also have some breaking news. Hit the breaking news music. Purse bid. I just watched a live stream of the WBO purse bid for Keyshawn Davis and Devin Haney, won by Top Rank. So a lot of information throwing your way, Chris Algieri. How you decide to take that information will dictate the rest of this episode.
There's a lot going on in boxing, and not just like fight stuff like usual. Like there's a lot of other like business stuff going down. So like you just mentioned a bunch of it, but I guess we could start with that Keyshawn Davis Devin Haney situation. No, I think that's $8.55 million. I saw was the purse bid won by Top Rank.
They had Takeover Promotions there, which is Teofimo Lopez's new promotional company, and it was pretty cool to see.
Did he bid? Did they bid?
They bid a little over $2 million.
Okay,
they went first.
They knew they weren't getting that.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool way that WBO has streamed these purse bids in the past, but this is probably one of the more high profile ones, and they promoted it like, hey, we're going to be streaming this, and Gustavo. And WBO, I clicked the link at 11 a.m. I watched it, and it was nice. They had some good production value. They had two cameras. They had Gustavo at the beginning explaining what was going to happen. They introduced the two bidders, which was Gardy Lopez of Top Rank. And I forgot the other gentleman's name, but he was representing Takeover Promotions, which is Teofimo Lopez's new promotional company.
Those are the only two bidders?
The only two bidders, which I found
interesting. Really? Yeah. Where was Matchroom?
They didn't want it.
It's a weird fight not to want. It's a good fight.
I know, and they hand over envelopes. One envelope is for $2,000, which is like some type of fee in order to do the purse bid, and they were, said that. And then they hand over the second envelope. Gustavo opens it. Here is the bid. Takeover Promotions puts forward $2.4 million, with the intentions of doing the fight somewhere in South Florida on either October 16th or October 23rd. Okay, great. Top Rank hands their envelope forward with a staggering $8.5 million, blows them out of the water. They want to do it either October 3rd in Barclays or Atlanta or Las Vegas. So Top Rank has won the bid for Devin Haney versus Keyshawn Davis. It's a big number. 75-25 split is the standard procedure for a purse bid. So Haney will over $6 million of that will go to Devin Haney. $2 million of it will go to Keyshawn Davis. Apparently Keyshawn Davis turned down $3 million before this purse bid. I don't know how accurate that is, but that's the old legal jargon here. When you watch a purse bid, I had a friend of mine, Adam Lefko, text me last week, what is a purse bid? I had to send him a voice note. It was actually kind of educational for myself to talk it through. Like, you've been part of purse bids. Like we've seen some big ones over the years. That's pretty big for Top Rank to win this. I assume it's going to end up on DAZN. I assume it's going to happen. Keyshawn has 48 hours to accept his side of the deal. But if everything plays out, we're going to get Devin Haney versus Keyshawn Davis for the WBO title sometime in October.
That's awesome. I love it. I love the fight. I think it's you got young guys in their primes putting it on the line, both undefeated. Fighting for the title. Love it. And listen, say what you will about Keyshawn being able to jump the line at 147 because he's never fought at 147. He's only had two fights at 140, but he's a world champion from 140 and 135. So I'm not as mad as some other things. It's also just a good fight. So I really want to see how this fight goes. Hopefully it ends up in Barclays. That'd be cool if we get that in New York. Because Devin's fought at the Barclays and he's done well there. Can he do it, again when he's not fighting Ryan Garcia? Is Keyshawn going to help draw enough that they can make that a big sellout night? Curious to see, because we need stars. We need guys who sell. And if we're getting these guys fighting each other, I think that's one of the paths to making stars. is having these guys fight each other where their fan bases are going to cross over, and we're going to see if they put butts in seats. So I don't know. I like it. I like it. I think my fingers are crossed that we get over the line.
Yeah, I think a lot more. Like, there's a few other things that have to happen with the purse bid process. Like the $6 million, I think Haney, according to some accounts that I'm reading, like Haney will get more than that because he is doing a separate deal with DAZN. You know, obviously he had that bidding war with Zuffa, so he'll get a lot more out of this deal. When it comes to the key point here is with Keyshawn, if he's going to accept the $2 million and change for this fight to fight for his first world title, $2 million, that's a lot of money, but you never know what a fighter thinks they're worth. And if we believe this report that he was offered $3 million before the purse bid to try to avoid that, will he get other money under the table, like to accept this fight? But you know, $2 million, it's pretty good payday for a guy fighting in his for a world title at 147. Like you said, like he jumped the line. I know WBO has their clause where if you're the champion at one weight and you can hop up, even though he'd be hopping up two weights. Because yeah, he was a WBO champion at 135.
That's right. I misspoke before. I said 140, but no, it was 135.
No, I know. That's the confusing part about it. And that's like the whole side of the street that is like pro-Zuffa and pro-UBOs, which we'll get to in a second. It's like, you know, these sanctioning bodies kind of make up rules as they go. This is a rule for WBO. There's a little bit of a bending of the rule. Like WBO and Top Rank have worked together pretty closely. That's like the one downfall, I would say.
Yeah, how many times we've seen guys coming off losses go into world title fights, which is supposed to never happen.
Teofimo Lopez, Ryan Garcia.
Happens more often than not these days. So, I don't know. Like you said, the rules, who's really paying attention, right? That's how the governing bodies look at it. Whatever. We want to make big fights.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the rules are being bent, but I'm fine if they're going to be bent to make a Devin Haney versus Keyshawn
Davis. Make a good fight, right? It's not like we're ramrodding some unknown guy out of nowhere, you know, to make this fight happen. You know, it's not like a gimme fight where it's like, oh well, we want Devin to defend his title and keep it, so we're gonna invent this number one contender and put him in there. No, it's a good fight that has a lot of crossover appeal.
Yeah, Top Rank and WBO have been cozy over the years. I'm not saying that's what happened here, but, you know, Keyshawn has one fight or two fights at 140. Looked great in both the fights, and then he gets this title shot at Devin Haney, who had to decide whether he was going to go to Zuffa, potentially fight Shakur Stevenson, and would have to give up his WBO title or keep the WBO title, fight Keyshawn Davis. So,
well, that's the thing. There would be no argument if it was Shakur, right? Because Shakur actually is a world champion at 140. So him stepping into this position, I don't think the argument is because Keyshawn was a world champion at 135 a little while ago, and he's able to skip the line. But who else would really be in the running for this anyway? Let's think, because Rollies and Tio are fighting, you know, again.
Like Brian Norman is rebuilding.
Brian Norman's rebuilding, probably not ready to go right into a Haney fight. Now, Haney also already has the win over him. Who were the number one contenders?
And then it falls off a cliff after that. The welterweight rankings are, I'm happy to see Teofimo in the division. Rolly has been in the division for a while. Ryan now has a belt that Haney has a belt. But after that, like the bottom five, at least according to Ring, but the bottom five of the...
Well, you got guys like Raul Curiel, I think.
Yeah, he's fighting Pro Box, right?
He's a deserving guy.
But he's in the 154 now?
Oh, I don't know. Did he move up?
No. Curiel's fighting this weekend. Excuse me. Who's Barao fighting?
Barao is fighting Santillan at 154.
Yeah, that's where I got mixed up with Curiel and Santillan.
Yeah, that's a Pro Box card. That's September 11th in San Diego. Really good card. Venato Lopez is coming back on that card. He's with Pro Box TV now. You know, the adjustment that Pro Box TV has made is that you're going to see a lot more recognizable names.
Yeah, some of these cards are great. The Lester one. When's the Lester one?
August 29th. That's coming up right around the corner. Oh, I got Najee Lopez on it. You got Ramon Cardenas on it. You got, obviously, Lester Martinez. Stacked card.
For five smackaroos?
$5 a month, guys.
That's what I paid for this. That's what I paid for this espresso right here.
Yeah, and the fights are going to be way better than that thing tastes. I'm telling you that.
Yeah, it's a little dull. It's a little bitter.
It didn't look very good.
It's a little. It's up towards the end of
for the price of a shitty cup of coffee. You can watch a great fight.
A great card. So I got the WBO welterweight rankings here. They got Haney champ 1, Keyshawn 2, Norman 3, Teofimo 4, Manny Pacquiao 5, Barboza 6, Rohan Polanco, Alexis Rocha, Santillan, Curiel, Tiger Johnson.
Yeah, so the argument, it becomes a little bit of a moot point at that point because the other guys are busy. you know, T.O.'s busy, Rolly's busy. You know, I would say, I think Curiel is a guy who's there, but maybe he's just not there yet in terms of being able to step into that kind of fight. But he's, his name's not big enough, which is why we're getting this situation here. So I have heard some chatter about, oh, well, Keyshawn's skipping the line. He jumped up two weight class, but it's a good fight, man. I'm going to overlook it. I'm going to bend the rules myself. This is a good fight.
Yeah. Najee just tweeted a picture of him FaceTiming Bill Haney. Bill Haney says he's happy with the bid and they are ready to fight. Like they nice. Like Haney's side's fine. Like they're right, happy. Yeah. Like they're making the lion's share of the bid. They as the champion,
which and they making, should and they should.
Yeah, and they're making a lot more on top of it with this new deal that they have with DAZN. It comes down to what Keyshawn Davis wants to do here, and if Top Rank can placate him and tell him, like, you know, you can win this fight. Like this isn't like. Yeah. Take the $2 million and then you could potentially lose and we have to, you know, rebuild your career or whatever. No, like,
yeah, it's not the Jared Anderson situation where it's like,
right, oh, you're not cashing out. Like, I don't right. feel this, I don't feel that side from Keyshawn's side. I feel like Haney's going to be the favorite, but this is
even
one
if
of the
Keyshawn
toughest
were to
fights.
Lose, even if Keyshawn were to lose that fight, I don't think it's not career derailing at
no,
all.
Not at all.
I think, you know, you're losing to a guy with a lot more experience. You're losing to a guy who's been there, multi-division world champion, who's beaten literal legends. It's a great way for him, like I said, to be introduced to the world at this level. And it's a hell of a fight. I mean, for Keyshawn as well, for both guys, it's a tough fight. We're gonna have to see, you know, if Keyshawn is there yet, because there's no question Keyshawn will be one of those guys. He might be one of those guys already, but. A win here would be massive for him, and I don't think a loss would be that detrimental. No loss is good. There's no good losses, but I don't know. I think it's worth the risk.
Haney definitely be the favorite.
Yeah.
Like, how much? Like 2-1? Is that too steep?
2-1 is pretty steep, but also maybe like the right call. You know, you saw Bud came out and said this is a 50-50 fight, which I think on paper, when you think of the guys, yeah, but I think the weight class matters. Devin's a lot more comfortable at 147. We've seen him look really good. We've seen him probably look the best he's looked. He looks stronger. He punches harder. You know, his conditioning has always been great. And Keyshawn has not been, you know, at 47 at all. And at 140, you know, his physical advantages weren't as drastic as they were at 35. So, you know, we don't know what Keyshawn exactly is going to look at. So that's why I think they're going to look at this fight and maybe end up close to a 2-1.
Yeah, I think Haney will be the favorite. I think Haney will win the fight. But you got to think this, man. Like, Haney's never been in there with someone as fresh and powerful and
fresh and
in
deadly.
Their prime like Keyshawn Davis. Like, Brian Norman, like, 23 years old, but I feel like he was too green. Like, we predicted
right before his that. Time.
Yeah, his we predicted that. And then if you can go through Haney's resume and kind of pick at it and be like, all right, this guy was over the age of
Ramirez, older, even
Lomachenko was
older, smaller, way smaller.
What's his name was older, Progre
was older. And that was also the beginning of his decline. We saw
Kambosos was before 30, but
Kambosos just isn't on that level. Kambosos was the most prime guy that he's fought to date, you know, world champion, but
then Ryan.
But he also fought Kambosos over there. He went to Australia to fight all because so that yeah twice. So that adds to it a little bit as well. And then yeah, he fought Ryan. But Ryan, I don't even know how, you said this on a past show. I don't even know how to gauge the Ryan fight anymore. It's so convoluted because it's like
Mrs. Wade
was he on drugs?
He was
not? Was you know like. But I'm saying that were the drugs had an effect on him that night? Was he using them before, prior? We don't know. We never will know. But it was in his system. That's objectively the truth. The weight, how much did the weight have a factor on it? Which it certainly did. There's no way it didn't. I don't know. I don't know how to gauge that one anymore. I just look at it like, yeah, shit, Ryan's super talented. And damn, Haney's a dog. That's how I look at that fight now. Like, I look at that fight as positive for Haney, but he's a dog, man. He made some mistakes that night. He fought stupid, but he's a dog.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so I think it's going to be a good fight. I think I like this fight a lot. I hope it gets done. Purse bid is in the past. It was pretty cool to watch that. Hope WBO, I hope a lot of other organizations decide to air that? Gives it a little bit more transparency?
Shout out to Gustavo, friend of the show, but also the WBO. I feel like they are probably leading in terms of governing bodies, like leading the charge of the future, being more up to date with the way they do things. And they've been sticking to their guns a little bit more. They've been sticking to the rules a little bit more, even though this one's a little bit outside that rule set, like we said. But like, this is cool. They're unveiling. They're opening up the curtain so people can see what's going on. Like you said, people who are in our industry don't understand what purse bids are.
Yeah, exactly. It's a little confusing. It's how they come about is confusing. But all right, the saga's over, or at least you think it's over, and hopefully we get it October 3rd. Hopefully we get it in Barclays. Selfishly, you know, they turned it out for Boots and Zayas. So that's a little different. You know, you have a guy in Boots who is from Philly. It's a quick drive, and then the Puerto Rican crowd. And for them to make it pretty lit in there. Like, Haney has fought there. Like, Haney's a big name. Like, I think he could do, like, maybe he won't sell out, but I think he could do pretty good numbers at Barclays.
Yeah, because he's already been there, and he has done well there. And like you said, he is a big star. He moves the needle, very much so. And it's a big fight. It's a world title fight. Welterweight division's hot again. And Devin's one of those guys. Devin might be the guy to beat at welterweight, which is, you know, you got to tip your hat to Keyshawn going, if he does take the fight, obviously, going right for maybe the most dangerous guy in the division.
Yeah.
Or at least the guy to beat.
For sure. It's definitely Haney number one. This weekend over in Las Vegas on DAZN and TNT, we have a banger of a fight, William Zepeda versus Lamont Roach. This is for the vacant WBC title that Shakur Stevenson vacated last year. So it's a good one. Like, I don't see how Roach versus Zepeda won't be a banger, because you got two differing styles. You got Zepeda, who throws about 80 to 90 punches a round. You have Roach, who throws half that, who's more of a technician. Title on the line. Like, this is going to be a great fight. I think it's being slept on, criminally slept on in the boxing community, but we get it. And I think it's going to be a great offering on TNT as well, for those that want to, you know, flip through channels and they see, ooh, some boxing on, leave it on. Ooh, great fight. Ooh, when's the next great fight? That's why I like the TNT deal, and I think this is a perfect TV fight.
I'm glad you said it, because I agree. It's a bit of a sleeper. This is a sneaky good fight that is probably not getting the press it deserves, but it's going to be on TNT. I was talking to Tim Bradley last night, our friend, well, my friend. I don't know if you're friendly with.
We're friends.
Friend. Okay, our friend of the show, Tim Bradley.
Bradley was probably on this show the most.
I didn't know that.
Pre-CA. Mm-hmm. Pre-CA, I would have to have...
Tim was a regular?
Tim was a regular, because he would say literally everything, and I love that.
No, Tim's the best. I was talking to him last night, saying how happy I am that I'm seeing him back on my feed. I'm seeing his face talking into the camera, talking about boxing. I'm seeing him on cards, so I love that
he's back. Wait a second. Before the jump in here, have you seen this? Speaking of Tim Bradley, I saw a little bit of a debate going on Twitter of... who's the better who had a better career, Errol Spence or Tim Bradley? Or who's the better boxer, Errol Spence or Tim Bradley?
So the comparison is going to come down to the two weights, because Tim at 140 was similarly to Spence, able to like go around and collect the titles, and then moved up and had a his career
Spence
at 40
was more dominant.
Definitely welterweight. I mean, Tim's run at welterweight was more of money grabs with the three Pacquiao fights, fighting a super old Rios. I mean, that was
an impressive win.
That was one of the best performances of Tim's career, was the Marquez win. You know, the Ruslan fight of the year. You know, he had those. And I remember Andre Ward was talking about Tim one day. He's like, hey man, he's like, you know, I got what I got. I got my undefeated record. I got, you know, I got my medals, you know, and my medal. He's like, but I don't got a fight of the year. You know, like, Tim had that. Tim has a fight of the year with Ruslan. So very differing careers. And I agree, Spence was more dominant, especially at welterweight. And even compared to the junior welterweight fights, because Tim was always in wars. You know, the Kendall Holt fight where he got dropped bad and had to come back. And, you know, Tim was a warrior. And he didn't have, obviously, the physical gifts that Spence has. So it's hard to compare.
I think Spence had a more dominant run.
Yeah, no question. Spence was very dominant and beating very, very good fighters, and not like close. He was beating guys up. You know, like, He had a lot of close, quote unquote, split decisions. I didn't think a lot of those fights were close. He was beating guys up.
Because there's a discussion, like, is Errol Spence a Hall of Fame fighter?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like, not only like the bar is pretty much been lowered in terms of who gets into the Hall of Fame as a fighter, but like if you're going by like strict, like how baseball does it or some of the other sports, like where they put a little more emphasis on the careers and it's not more of like a money making thing. Yeah. Like Spence is definitely a Hall of Famer. Like he was the best welterweight for several years.
years where there was very good welterweights. It was a deep division.
I will say like obviously the Terrence Crawford, like that's a big thing. Like the fact that he couldn't fight Crawford when he was supposed to fight him, and Crawford wasn't able to fight all the guys that Spence was clearing out, because I do think Crawford would have handled all the welterweights that Spence did pretty much the same way, if not more dominant. Like obviously Crawford is better than Spence. We saw it play out in the ring. It's just like the end of Spence's career between the Crawford loss and then the 3 years off and then coming back with the zoo.
There's two debates because there's like, all right, who was the better fighter, but who had the better career is different things. I think even Ryan Garcia went out there and said, hey, he's like, low key, if you look, like Spence actually had a better run than Terrence did. But obviously, we saw what happened with Terrence.
Because of the business side of the sport.
So like, that's the thing. It's like, it's not by any fault of Bud that he didn't get those fights when he should have been fighting them. Even Kell Brook, he got Kell Brook like later. Like if you'd have got Kell Brook in his prime, that's a much better fight. Kell Brook was a motherfucker.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's very clear that to me that this welterweight era is over. Like the PBC and plus Crawford welterweight era is over once we saw Spence retire in that ring. To me, the top two to come out of that era is Spence and Crawford. So therefore, like they're shoo-in Hall of Famers. I think Spence is a Hall of Famer.
Yes, I agree.
He was just so good for a solid 6-7 year run, which is very big for
Spence was the end of the era. It's my era too. Like those are the guys that I fought. Like we're not. I mean, granted, we have Connor, but I fought him. Like I was so much older, and he was so much younger. So he's still going to be around. But like we're not going to see the guys that I fought fighting anymore. You know, Spence is gone. You know,
Pacquiao laces him up.
But again, I don't think we're not going to see him at the world class level again.
Hey, man, he's ranked top five in the WBO.
I think the Mario Barrios was the last time we're going to see him in a real kind of fight.
It's like Mayweather or bust.
Yeah, and you know it probably happens at some point, but yeah, that era is the door is shut.
Going back to where we started here, Bradley, you said you talked to Bradley. What did he say?
We're just telling him it was good to see him back, you know, and so this brings us to the Lamont Roach this weekend over on TNT. Good fight, really good fight, and the more I look at it, I'm like you said, like this is going to be a good fight. Zepeda's always in fun fights, but so is Roach in very different ways. They have such drastically different styles. Zepeda is a whirling dervish, nonstop puncher, aggressive, hard nose. You drop him, he gets up, he keeps doing the same thing. I read an article on BoxingScene.com where they were saying it was just like, hey, he's just got to show up and be himself. And just like, he's such an effort guy. He's like, I just got to be more of me and I'll get the win. You know, that's the way that Zepeda fights. But then you got Roach, who's a tactician. And he's very smart, but he's also willing to engage. He's a high contact fighter. He's one of those DMV type fighters. He's right in the pocket. He's not gonna go dance around the ring. He's gonna catch and shoot and be there, and you can touch him. So I think we're gonna end up having a really good fight, kind of similar to the Pitbull Cruz fight, which turned out to be a really fun fight with Roach as well.
Yeah, I've seen a few people tweet at me like, "Oh, Zepeda is a lesser version of Roach."
I disagree.
I just totally disagree. I think Zepeda's better.
Yes.
He's more dynamic offense. It's more than like people just look at Zepeda or they just look at volume punchers and think that's it. Like, oh, just 82 punches, just rock him, sock him, don't think about anything. I think Zepeda showed in that Shakur fight. I think he gave Shakur his toughest fight of his career. Like, there's more to him just than the 82 punches, which is definitely number one thing you do think about when it comes to Zepeda. But he's got some power. He's got some. I think he has the power edge over Roach.
It's the big it's the biggest aspect of his game, but it's just one aspect. He's not just the volume guy.
Yeah, and right now on FanDuel, Roach is -152 favorite, so it's very slight. Zepeda +120. Definitely think it's going to go the distance. Roach is coming off of the back-to-back draws versus Pitbull and Gervonta
Davis. And he's in another
Davis.
Tough competitive fight.
I got to give this guy credit, man. Three fight stretch of Gervonta Davis, Pitbull Cruz, and William Zepeda. That's great.
He's going for it.
At this age, when you're going for it, you're making the top dollar.
And he hasn't lost any of them.
Technically hasn't lost any of those fights. The draw
title
is,
fights as well.
Yeah, the draw is -1500, or excuse me, +1500. Should be -1500 for considering how often Roach is in. I'm actually thinking about sprinkling something on the draw.
It's, dude, that's like betting on lightning striking three times in the same spot. Which, I mean, I think crazier things happen, but the odds.
It's because of how he fights. It's because of Roach is he's great. He does a lot of things good. Doesn't do one thing great. He finds himself. He fights on the margins a little bit. But it's just like I said though.
He's a high contact guy. So if you're looking for reasons to score against him, he'll give you them.
Exactly. And he was down early in that Pitbull fight. And then it's a tale of two fights where the second half of the fight, I thought he won. He swept the final six rounds on my card. It was the first six that produced the draw, especially with the knockdown. And he just leaves it open for the judges to come in. Like, and same thing with the Gervonta fight. Like, he was first couple of rounds, he was very tentative. Obviously, because Gervonta has crazy power, and then he finds his rhythm, and then that's the fight where I think the whole world got to see Lamont Roach, and like, because when you think of Lamont Roach before the Gervonta fight, 130-pounder, kind of a stylist, doesn't have a lot of power. After that, like, I would put Roach into like the dog category, where he will stand and trade. Like, he had no problem standing and trading with Gervonta Davis. He had no problem standing his ground with Gervonta. Had no problem standing his ground with Cruz, which leads me to believe he will have no problem standing his ground with Zepeda, who's going to throw a lot of punches here, and he's going to have to pick off those punches in order to get a win.
We also saw Zepeda, though, in the Tevin Farmer fight. Think about volume punchers in this, why a lot of guys aren't volume punchers at the highest level is because there's so many holes in the defense because you're so offensive-minded. And we saw in the Tevin Farmer fight that there are places for Zepeda to get picked off, and he can get hurt. Tevin's not a puncher, especially at 35, and he was able to put... He was able to put Zepeda down. You know, Roach, also a sharp puncher, also a counter puncher, and I believe a better puncher than Tevin Farmer. So you can see where the offensive-minded Zepeda could get picked off by spots for Roach, but it's going to be a situation like we've just been saying. Because Roach is willing to stay in the pocket and he's such a high-contact guy, he's going to lose rounds on activity.
He's got to win those early rounds. He can't do the same thing he did in the first two fights.
No, and he's got to make them up with sharp, hard counters, eye-catching shots. And by eye-catching, I don't just mean popping head up. I mean putting this guy down, hurting him, you know, getting to the point where there's a visible shift when he hits him. Because if he doesn't and he just kind of, like Zepeda just walks through the shots, he's going to get outworked.
The draw is going to happen.
This is in Las Vegas, so it is a bit neutral ground, even though, you know, it is towards the west.
Yeah, the Texas thing was brutal.
Yeah, even Texas though we predicted that. I was hoping this fight was going to end up in Las Vegas because I think Roach has it's a little more even ground.
Yeah. Zepeda obviously did not look sharp in those two Farmer fights. Those were tune-ups gone wrong, turned into two fights, got a majority decision win and a split decision win.
And got dropped.
And got dropped. But then I loved how he looked against Shakur.
Yeah. The game plan was based on his style, but it was like, and Paulie Malignaggi always says, he's like, yeah, volume punchers, what happens when they get the guy who can control space? They generally, the punch numbers go way down. Not Zepeda. Yep. He made it work. And
he made it work against Shakur.
Yeah. And
that was mostly because I don't think he was that worried about the power, right?
No, I don't think he was ever really able to hurt him. Zepeda's not big. He's not a big guy. I don't think he's a huge puncher either at all. I think he's a solid puncher. But, you know, Paulie always said, like, these guys, they're when you guys control distance, they're able to get that. No, Roach was able, Zepeda was able to still close the gap and do that. But he's not going to have to work as hard with Roach to do that. Roach is going to allow him to be in there and be in that pocket. I think this is going to be actually a really fun fight.
Zepeda throws 44 power shots a round. That's a more than what Roach throws total per round.
That's a lot of power punches. He jabs too, right? What are his jab numbers?
It's split. He throws 85 a round. He throws more power shots than jabs. But it's It's only like by a difference of two or three.
Yeah.
But Roach only throws 42 punches a round total.
Yeah, he's and that was one of the knocks on Roach early on. The Jamel Herring fight. I called that fight for Top Rank. He just kept his hands in his pockets. and came on late. He actually hurt Jamel late in the fight, but just didn't throw enough. And I thought that that was just what he was. Like, ah, this guy's a sharpshooter, but if you keep him busy, he's not gonna pull the trigger. He's not that guy anymore. He's figured it out.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I don't even like think of him. Like, I don't even hold that against him. That fight,
no, he's gotten so much better since
then. Was that 2019?
Sounds about right.
Because that was a while back, or maybe even more recently. But whatever. Fights.
We were in Fresno. I think it was a Fresno card outdoors.
I don't even like think of Lamont Roach as that anymore because he's just gotten so much better. And the Gervonta fight, like to perform like that on that level, even though I'm giving him full credit. I was about to say, even though like Gervonta had like 1 foot out the door and like wasn't there. No. Bullshit, right. Dan. You're bullshit, Dan. Because he took that fight.
I'm calling bullshit on myself.
Yeah, I'm calling bullshit on myself because I'm not about to discredit Roach in that fight because he stood up to the bully. Yep. He stood in there in the middle of that ring against
Gervonta. He also did what he said he was going to do. He said that.
Yeah, I was so impressed, man. I was so impressed because we do our interviews with PPV.com. They come in. We sit with them. You knew him before me. I didn't really have any interactions with him. I was like, damn, this guy is super confident. This guy is like he is like borderline cocky heading into this Gervonta fight all week long. And then I was lucky enough to do the broadcast for Amazon that night. And I was in the locker rooms of Gervonta first. I've told the story before. It was like a morgue in there. It was dead silent. And then over in Roach's, everyone's having a great time. Music playing. He's happy, confident, borderline cocky. And he went in there and did his thing. And I think that from that day on, the Roach tank fight on, we're looking at a different fighter. Yeah, he's got to come through. This is, how many chances can you get, you know? Like, 3 fights in a row now. Obviously, I don't think there will be a draw. Like, he's got to get his hand raised here and become
how many chances
some
you
justification.
Get to, how many chances you get, a lot of times depends on how you perform, right? And Roach has been performing at a high level, and he makes for entertaining fights. You know, he's just willing to fight everybody. You mentioned, like, oh, this run of fights that he's taking. He's accepting these opportunities. A lot of guys don't. We live in a world where a lot of fighters don't take tough fights. Roach does.
Yeah, he's like just below like superstar status, and like the draws have like kind of probably helped in terms of him like not that didn't help his wallet per se because he can't really demand too much. So you add all that together, he could probably get these fights, and he's willing to negotiate. He's willing to step into the ring with anyone. That's why we're seeing him again. Are you putting any stock into the fact that this fight's at 135, where Roach's last fight was at 140?
No, I think he's better served at 35. I think the 40 going up to 40 was just because the opportunity to fight for a world title against a guy that he could beat. It didn't work out, obviously, but I think he's really a 35 pounder, and he's a big 35 pounder. So, and they're disciplined. I know the Roach family. I know that gym. I know how they operate. I think he'll be fine.
Yeah. I think that the Pitbull fight, I don't know if it was a title fight or it was an interim title fight.
Very possibly could have been an interim.
Yeah. Who knows with this stuff? I don't know. I haven't even come up with a pick yet, you know? It's just one of those fights where it's so even. I could see the case for Cepeda with the overwhelming Roach, who is a slow starter. And you talk about these rounds that can go either way in these Roach fights. And the judges, from what we've seen over the years, do go to the side of the fighter that throws more punches, who's more aggressive. But then again, Roach, I think, will land the cleaner, harder shots. Or that's his path to victory. I'm going to go with Roach. I'm going to go with Roach in a close fight, like a controversial decision. And he finally gets his hand raised, wins the title that he should have won over Tank over a year, 16 months over. So give me Roach.
I hate agreeing with you, but I had already had Roach in my head as getting the victory, going, you know, indecision in a close fight. I think he's going to understand. I need to do that little bit of extra thing that I haven't been doing these last couple fights to get over the hump and get the victory. I think he does it, but it's not going to be easy. This is going to be like a nip tuck 7-5 type fight, or like a 6-6 with a knockdown. It's going to be a very, very tight, fight. And I wouldn't be surprised. I'm leaning Roach, but I'm not confident.
I'm like 51-49.
Yeah, it's I like Roach. I think stylistically, because of his sharpshooting ability, he's gonna find the holes. And he's hungry. The guy's hungry, and he wants to get that title, wants to get that lick back. So, yeah, I'm going Roach.
Draw. I'm sprinkling. I'm putting $10 on the draw.
That would be gut-wrenching for Roach.
I got to hit up Lee Groves and ask, when's the last time a fighter had three consecutive draws at, like, this level?
Lee will probably know off the top of his head.
I know. I should have emailed him. I'll get that, and I'll tweet it out.
Back in the day, draws were common. Like, draws have become really uncommon because people hate them so much. But back in the day, you should see guys used to have 6-7 draws. You don't see that anymore.
Don't. Co-main event, Raymond Morataya is fighting Robson Cansecao. How is Robson Cansecao getting these chances?
I believe it's pronounced Hobson. I think their R's are H's over the Brazilian.
Wow.
Hobson
Cansecao. How are you getting these chances, Hobson? Because take a look at his box rec. His last fight was a unanimous decision win over Helber Rojas. Before that, he beat Yanaquir Roldan. Probably destroyed that name. Yanaquir? Not a queer. Yanaquir Roldan. Oshaki Foster's split decision loss. Oshaki Foster's split decision win, which I don't think he won that fight. I go down this list. Like, these names, does that indicate title fight for Robson? Like, I wanted a better fight for Morataya.
It's weird that his last two fights were in Brazil. Like, it was kind of like he was in a rebuilding, get used to 135 kind of phase there, because he had two fights at 135 or two fights over 130, both in Brazil, where he's from, coming off the Oshaki fights which they split. I thought Oshaki won both. I thought that was a really bad, really, really bad robbery, the first one. But he had the draw with Navarrete where he performed really well. Really well. On the strength of what he's done with who he's done it with, you know, I forgot he fought Oscar Valdez. Oh, wow.
You know what I mean? Like, Murataya, huge win over Andy Cruz, one of the rising names in the sport. I just feel like Cansecao is a guy we've just seen on get title shots and then come up short. And we are kind of questioning some of his title shots a couple years back.
He's a defense guy, meaning he's the guy you pick for your defense. And he's not a real 35-pounder. You know, he's coming up to fight. I mean, he's huge, by the way. I forgot which fight I called. I called one of his fights for a Top Rank show. And everyone knows I like to run. And when I get on location, I usually hit the streets and run. But it was like super hot in Arizona, so I ran in the treadmill inside, and Hobson was in there as well, cutting weight. And bro, he's like 6 feet tall, 130 pounds, super muscular. I couldn't believe how big he was when I was running next to him on the treadmill. I was like, good God, this guy fights at 130. He's tall. He's got a big head. I'm like, wow. But he wasn't a puncher, and he's still not going to be, especially at 35. So Morataya is a beast, absolute beast. This is kind of like a... This is what this is. This is Morataya hanging around just in case a big unification comes up. Because I talk to Robert all the time. Morataya doesn't want to fight at 35 anymore. They want to move up. So, but they said if they can get a unification where the IBF rule goes out the window, because if you have unification, you don't have to do the second day weigh-in.
Yeah.
Which is a big issue for Morataya, is it being as big as he is at 35. When you're outgrowing a weight class, you don't want to have to make the weight again the day of the fight. So I get it. So this is them hanging out. Maybe Shakur comes down to 135 and get the Shakur fight. They said they would stick around for that.
Yeah, for the ring title.
Yeah, another big opportunity comes up and where they don't have to do the second day weigh-in. I think Morataya stays at 35. Otherwise, this is probably the last time we see Morataya at 35, almost definitely. And I think, like I said, I think this is just a... kind of hang around 35 in case something big comes.
Kind of feel like defense. That's probably why they settled on Cansecao.
Yeah.
Because he's in flux right now. Not flux, but like he's in Morataya, like you just illustrated. Like he wants to go to 140, 135. He could fight the winner of the main event. He could fight the winner of Roach and Cepeda.
Yeah.
That's unification. Shakur still has the WBO title.
Yep.
Morataya has the IBF. You have Abdullah Mason, who has the WBO. Mason versus Morataya. Ooh, oof. Baby.
Yeah, that's... and Robert mentioned that fight as well. That's he They would be very open to that.
Well, Ring has Shakur and Muay Thai 1 and 2. So if they could figure out a way to fight, and Shakur Stevenson right now, if you've been paying attention, signs with Zuffa, it doesn't have many dance partners. We thought it was going to be Haney. That's obviously not happening. We just don't know what weight class Shakur is at, and we also don't know who he's going to be fighting. Like, Muay Thai, I don't know how locked in he is with DAZN. I know DAZN is locking up fighters, and Top Rank is pretty much dug in with DAZN. I don't know that. I don't know if that has ever come up with your discussions with Robert Garcia. Like, I know Robert Garcia has a lot of fighters that fight for Zuffa. Mm-hmm. Like, does Muay Thai have to go and sign with Zuffa in order to get the Shakur fight?
That's a good question. And one, I'm talking to Robert in a little bit. I always like digging in on Muay Thai because he's one of my favorite guys, and
Robert will answer that too.
Oh, absolutely. And Robert's very bullish on Muay Thai. Obviously, he has been for a long time. Robert, gotta love Robert, because Robert is willing to have his guys fight anyone, and all of his fighters have the same mentality. They're willing to fight anyone. Like, it's just in that gym. That's just the way it is. Like, no. Like, there's no question. It's like, yeah, no, you fight tough fights. You fight the toughest guys possible. I love, it's a culture in that gym. And it comes from the top. It comes from Robert, because that's how Robert is. Robert takes risks. Robert just had one of his studs lose on ProBox TV 2 weeks ago. Someone that he was really high on, and, you know, the kid was super good. I forgot his name right now. Coria. 5-0, 5 knockouts. Goes in and fights a really tough guy he's Cuban, but he's from Kentucky, Louisville. And man, the guy was just on. Super experienced, had a lot of fights, looked really good, and beat his guy. And Robert's just like, well, you know, the guy he was really high on, but put him in. He's like, I know this is a tough fight. This guy's really tough. And sure enough, takes a loss, and you move on. It's okay. You know, that's how boxing should be. It's the way it always was. And Robert's very old school in that way. And his fighters have adopted that culture.
Ask him how hard it would be to make a Shakur fight. Like, given where Shakur is, and he's pretty much entrenched with Zuffa, how hard is that fight? Because that's the best fight in lightweight.
I don't know if anyone has that answer. It's really hard to gauge.
Just curious how he would navigate the answer.
Yeah.
Because I don't know. Yeah, you're right. I don't know. Shakur is, once again, like, this always happens in boxing, where we have, like, pretty much everyone, we're all locked into the zone, and everyone is seemingly under the same banner now. We can make any fight, and then you have the best fighter, arguably the number one pound for pound fighter in the world, on an island. Like, maybe fighting Jose Venezuela, like maybe fighting in one of these massive ring cards. Like, there's still ways, like Shakur says, like, I signed with Zuffa because they promised me big fights. I wouldn't have signed with them if I didn't think I can get the big fights. We'll see.
But it's one thing to say you can get the big fights, but you got to play with the other guys. You got to come to the table and make it happen. And this could be a position for DAZN and the other promotions to block out Zuffa.
That's 100% what they're doing.
And essentially going to block out Shakur. It's a dangerous play for Shakur, because if the old guard comes together and makes a stand, which they very well could right now,
what they're doing.
It's bad news.
It's what they're doing. They're 100%. Like, Shakur took the money, which is it's fine. Like, everyone should do that. But also, he says, DAZN came in last minute with a similar offer, almost the same amount of money as Zuffa. And he said it was too late. That could have made things so much easier to make some of these big fights. And we'll see if Ring, what happens, like, if it's a Ring show and they want to, and Haney beats Keyshawn. And then we get Shakur versus Haney on a ring card.
But also, we're seeing Ryan and Connor. Ryan's not signed to Zuffa.
Right. There's workarounds.
Yeah.
And we're seeing a lot going on with Zuffa, which I do want to get to.
But did you see what Oscar had to say about Zuffa? Calling it a Trojan horse, and that the fighters are taking the
Odyssey
money right now.
Inspired?
He's saying they're taking the money now. He's like, but the contract's going to change. The money's going to change. He's like,
of course.
He said, be careful. Watch out. Be careful. Watch out. He kept saying, it's a Trojan horse. But he is still playing in the same sandbox, because he's making the Connor and De La Hoya and Ryan fight. If the promoters come together and like, you know what, we're not doing that anymore. It's you're on that side, you're on that side. We're on this side, we're on this side. That's it. Which they very well could do, because they have so much of the market share. and Zeus is picking off stars and taking them, you know, it's going to hurt those guys in the long run.
It's going to hurt the zone too. Like,
yeah, because you can't get the biggest fighters in the world.
Like, those ring cards are the biggest fights of the year. Mm-hmm. Like, that justifies the zone ultimate that I just bought the zone ultimate the other day. I was like,
how did you do that? I was trying to upgrade. I was at a party
on Long Island, and I like sometimes I get a stream from the network from CompuBox, and I couldn't get the stream to work. So I wanted to watch the Joshua fight. I didn't want to like watch the highlights. I wanted to watch it on my phone. So like I went right to the zone. What do you mean? Like, you click the button and it says either buy it for 50 or get the zone ultimate for 500.
But I already have the regular subscription. I was trying to upgrade. Like the other one? Yeah, I got the basic one somehow. I don't know. I thought I had the ultimate, and then I'm looking like, oh, I don't have the ultimate. What the hell am I doing here?
We should get it for free.
We should.
Come on, DAZN. What are we doing?
We cover the sport for you guys. Come on.
What are we doing over here? Speaking of Zuffa, De La Hoya, that whole thing, there's been an update. Nico Ali Walsh took a meeting with Nick Khan of TKO and Zuffa. There was a photo op of a meeting, and then Ali Walsh appeared on the Zuffa broadcast, which would lead you to believe, like, oh, okay, he's complicit now. Zuffa has now bought him. He's now change sides, because Ali Walsh is one of the only fighters, he says, that is opposing what Zuffa is trying to do. But Ali Walsh still maintains, I am still in opposition of the changes to the Ali Act. I went there to hear what Nick Khan had to say transparency. Who posted the picture? Did Zuffa fly him out there? All those questions I still have for Ali Walsh. But he maintains that he is still fighting the good fight, and if anything, they're winning. Like, Ali Walsh's side is winning because it still hasn't passed the Muhammad Ali Act. There was something today, another update today. But when you see a photo op at a meeting with Nick Khan, who's a pretty shrewd businessman, you see him appear on the Zuffa broadcast, your mind goes to complicit. He's complicit. Are they playing him? Is he going to sign with Zuffa?
Complicit or compromised? I think of the other C word, compromise. Is he potentially compromised now?
Because he was fighting the good fight. Keep going.
He was fighting the good fight, and is he sticking to it? Do you see the writing on the wall, or do you just, you know, the kickbacks start to make you change your tune? We see this in politics all the time. I'm not saying any of this has happened. I've talked to Nico in the past couple of weeks about this whole thing. Great kid. He's really fighting the good fight. But you know, this is how politics work, and this is how things get muddied and muddled. And I wouldn't say they're winning just because it hasn't passed yet. It's just that they're fighting the good fight. They are kicking it down the road, which is good. But a lot of the things that Nico was talking about changing or adjusting were really good. And if he can make up ground like that to where this thing actually passes, but there's better adjustments being made, and it's not all pork. That's a political term. Pork in the bill. There's pork in the bill of all this stuff that's not good. We'll see. But this is politics 101. This is above our pay grade. Nico is fighting the good fight. He's got good lawyers around him. He's doing this all the time now. So I get that he's now making these, you know, this whatever this photo op is. But the meeting, because what else is this guy doing right now? He's not fighting because he's doing this full time. He says he is. I'm saying he's not fighting right now.
He says he's not fighting now for a number of reasons. One, because he's talking to senators every day. It's taking up his time. Number two is because he told me this. He tweeted, I tweeted the same things I'm saying right now. I put out a tweet like, I don't like the visual of this. I want to let it play out. But visually, this looks like a guy that's either complicit or is getting played. Or what's the purpose of going on the Zuffa broadcast? He didn't say anything during that interview with Joe Testor. It was just him being there, and he's the only fighter that's fighting against it, and he is an Ali. Like, the politicians that sat there and listened to the Senate hearing, they're gonna listen to what he has to say because he is a grandson of Muhammad Ali. So I give him that. It's just he says that he's also being blackballed, and he went on with Ariel Helwani. It changed my thoughts a little bit about it. I am skeptical, but I do think he means well, Ali Walsh, but I also know that he's a fighter, and anyone in boxing is very opportunistic, and he is a free agent right now. He's not signed with Top Rank anymore. He says he's not fighting right now because he's on the phones with senators all day long. I don't know how much I believe of that. He also told me in a tweet when he replied to what I tweeted out that he's currently being blackballed or blacklisted by the traditional promoters in fear of retaliation, which I don't understand at all, because you're on the side of that's who's opposing Zuffa. So if you signed with Matchroom or you signed with Top Rank or you signed with PBC or signed with any of the traditional companies, like, there's no retaliation. Like, what's Zuffa going to do at that point? Like, you're not going to sign with Zuffa, I don't think. If he goes and signs with Zuffa after all this, then
I wouldn't doubt there was. I wouldn't doubt there was an offer made already.
Hey, well, Ariel, go watch the interview with Ariel. It was really good. Ariel said, "Would you be open? Did fighting for Zuffa come up?" He said, "No." He goes, "Would you be open to fighting for Zuffa one day?" And he didn't rule it out because, like, once again, he's a free agent. He's opportunistic. Like, this guy doesn't.
He doesn't have a home right now.
Doesn't have a home, and he's not like a world class fighter. And I kind of have to respect it too, because maybe he thinks, like, listen, I'm not going to make an impact as a professional fighter. I think he has 2 losses and he has some wins, and, you know, how far can he possibly go? But I can make an impact with this new legislation. Like, my name is attached to it. My grandfather.
I think he's already done more with this than he did with his fight career by leaps and bounds.
Right? Yeah. Like, I'm looking for, like, the positives. I'm looking for, like, I don't want to be so negative. I don't want to see that immediately think sellout, compromised, all the C words and all that. And, like, what is this kid really trying to do? Like, I'm trying to, I do want to think of, is he really trying to help here? And
also this is boxing. It's hard to be optimistic in boxing.
Because I was with my dad, too. He's been around the sport forever. And I show him the phone. I'm like, look at this photo op. Look at Khan and Ali and Nico. And the first thing you think of is like, oh, they've got to him.
They got him.
They got him. I'm not ruling out 100%. But I do think
we're also not saying that he's got. You're not saying he's got.
Because one of the things he did say on the broadcast on Zuffa is, I don't care about Zuffa. He said that on the broadcast. I care about the fighters.
I did hear that. Yeah.
That was kind of nice. I appreciated that. And it was also a live interview. He could have literally looked into the mic and said, Zuffa is evil. Everyone out there. It was live. He could have done that too. So it was like a trust situation going
on. That was a dangerous thing putting him on there. He could have got on his milk carton and started preaching.
Exactly. But here's the thing. Like, Zuffa, TKO, Nick Khan, that side, like, we know what they want out of this. Like, they're having some issues with passing the bill as it's currently proposed. And as of today, there's a new bill going forward, bipartisan, with some different – they listen to both sides and they put it forward. And from what I've seen, it doesn't change all that much. But the main point is here, that Zuffa, TKO, Nick Khan, that side, we know what they want out of this. They want to get – this pass so they can start the league, they could implement the longer contracts, the lower pay, more of the lion's share going to them, all the stuff that we were talking about for months. Like, I would you agree that that's what the main thing is here? Like, that's what they're trying to do? Like, how much is Nick Khan really listening to what Nico is saying? They're ultimately probably going to get this thing passed. And something Ali Walsh said in the interview with Ariel was like, we got to come to a compromise. You know, we got to meet in the middle. Which means, like, okay, a few things will change here. But when it comes down to it, TKO is going to get the main things they want, which is the UBO, which is, yep. You know, the
ranking system. They're going to make the fluff fluffier, and they're going to keep the meat.
Exactly.
That's it. And they don't care. They don't care about the fluff. They care about the meat. They don't care about all that other stuff. They don't care about the lettuce and the tomato. They care about the meat.
Well, we're not eating lettuce now, Bar. We're still off lettuce.
I had a salad yesterday.
And you alive?
I'm good. I'm South Florida. I don't think we're affected by the parasites like you guys are. I think with the TKO group, as long as they get the main points that they need to, like, everything you said, to move us forward, I don't think they care about the other stuff. And they're willing to negotiate and give up whatever. That's what negotiating is. All right. You know, we put this out. We were one-sided. We have no opposition. Oh, Nico Ali Walsh comes in. There's De La Hoya comes in. You see these people come in. It's like, all right, there's opposition. Now we go to the table. We negotiate. But at the end of the day, we're getting what we're getting. We're getting what we need. We're getting what we want.
And this was a calculated move to have.
We'll
him
give
there.
You all that other stuff. Everything else you want, you can take it. As long as I get my UBO, as long as I get these contracts the way I want them, I don't care. Because at the end of the day, it won't matter anymore. All that fluff won't matter. Once they have that, it's go time.
Nico did say that he didn't stay for the fight because I had questions too. Like, I wanted Ariel, for the most part, he asked everything, did a good job with it. But I wanted to know, like, did Zuffa pay for your flight out there? Like, who set up this meeting? Who invited who? Who took the photo? Whose idea was it to post the photo? But he says that he went to the fight. He appeared on the broadcast, which was not negotiated beforehand. They asked him earlier that day, would you want to be on the broadcast? And then he said, what's up to Berlanga in the locker room? And then he left. He didn't stick around. He didn't want to be, like, you know, seen ringside, even though he went on the broadcast.
So that's probably a smart move, and it shows you that he's aware of the optics of what it may look like if he is seen there for photo ops and just taking pictures with fans and doing things like that. It's not a good look, even like you said, the optics of the snapshot isn't great. But the less of that's out, the less that he needs to cover up or avoid.
The four things he said they spoke about in the meeting, the four things that Ali Walsh wants to hammer home, and the four things that he's been telling the senators that he says he's on the phone with them twice a day for the last couple months, financial transparency, free agency, length of contracts, ranking transparency. Like, do we really think that's going to change? Like, maybe the financial transparency, like, you'll be able to see, which I feel like these things are already in place right now.
Yeah, they're not massive changes, and I don't see why they wouldn't, because there's ways about everything. That's the thing. Like, even the original Ali Act was written by lawyers. You can get around it. Like, everything can be getting around. Like, it didn't have any teeth. I always said that it needs to be expanded upon, not changed and watered down. I don't know, man. I don't see this really changing anything in a positive way for fighters.
That's not my main thing.
That's not what promoters want. Promoters don't want fighters to have more power. And as long as they can keep the ball in their court, they will.
We're talking about cutting through the fat of you want the meat of the bill. Like, the meat of this whole discussion is, I don't believe that Zuffa, TKO want to change this legislation for the good.
No.
They want to get it to their side.
It's power shift. That's all it is. It's a power shift.
So, yeah, and so they see a guy like Ali Walsh who, like I said, I think for the most part is trying to do good here, but you have to figure the facts. You're right. Chris is dying over here.
I missed the cough button. Sorry, guys.
Zuffa has got to him. Zuffa, he's good. He's good. They poisoned
my Nalgene.
They poisoned his water. I don't 100% see Zuffa trying to change his sport for the good. That's the main takeaway. So when I see Khan sitting there, it's like, okay, like, what's his motive here? Because how much is he listening? Like, how much does he want to change it for the good, or how much does he want to change it so for the shareholders, for TKO?
You know, and like,
they have goals.
I want to say no promoter wants to change the sport for the good, because they've got such a power dynamic over the fighters and the fight and the sport. But then I also look at it like, well, I mean, but you got guys like Bob, and Bob Arum, that is. You got guys like Oscar De La Hoya, you got guys like Eddie Hearn. They're not going anywhere, and they've been around this their whole lives. But then you look at the TKO group and Peter Kahn and Dana White and these guys, they came out of nowhere. They're not like lifelong, grandstanders in the sport. So you think, it's like, now do they really want to make the sport better? Do they care at all? I don't know. Probably not.
They care about is what turning it into the UFC. It's very obvious. I mean, it's very clear what they want. And it's not, it hasn't passed yet. And it's there. Zuffa did not get into boxing to co-promote.
No, they didn't come in to be another promotion.
Right. Right now they're co-promoting because that's their only option to make some money back here, is doing co-promotions with Golden Boy. Dana White went up on stage and said that fighters can fight for the sanctioning body belts by a case-by-case basis, depending on their goals, which is a clear roundabout about face from where they came in here saying. Like, Dana White came in saying, no, we won't be fighting for sanctioning bodies. We won't be doing co-promotions. Last I checked, they're doing both now. The WBC title is on the line. I have Ryan Garcia versus Conor Benn, and there's a co-promotion with Golden Boy, even though they want to take Golden Boy out of the poster, and they won't allow Oscar up on the stage. But Oscar says, I will be on the stage. Golden Boy will be front and center come fight week on September 12th for that. The uniforms, too, they've kind of went backwards a little bit on the uniforms. Like, Shakur says he's not wearing them. Berlanga didn't wear it. The bigger names aren't. I don't know how further they're going to go with that. But it's clear that they are realizing that this is taking longer than we expected. We can't just come in and just strong arm everything.
Well, it's really not taking longer because it has only been 6 months. But it is. They're realizing that
they thought it was going to be this.
Well, they didn't expect so much pushback. They didn't expect so much resistance. They didn't expect the old guard to unify in such an organized way. So they created their own monster, And part of the reason that happened, they let the cat out of the bag way too early.
Yeah, I know.
They came in with bluster. Yeah, they came in and told everybody what they were going to do long before they even started. So it just gave everyone time to kind of get organized and be like, oh, you're not doing that. You're getting rid of the governing bodies. Governing bodies are all going to get up in arms. Oh, you're getting rid of the promoters? You're not getting rid of us. We're not going anywhere. You got to understand, like every entity in the sport, this is their livelihood. They're fighting for survival. They're gonna throw everything, the kitchen sink, at protecting what they got. So yeah, when you write a letter to the stronghold and tell them you're coming next month, you know, it's not a great idea. they kind of did that. So now they're dealing with the pushback and the opposition and the resistance that a unified boxing is prepared to do.
Yeah. So as of today, this morning, the U.S. Senate Commerce Committee Chairman Ted Cruz, obviously Republican, Senator Jackie Rosen, Democrat from Nevada. So a bipartisan bill was pushed forward, legislation that removes legal barriers to allow voluntary league-style unified boxing organizations to compete alongside traditional promotions. So they listened to everything that Ali Walsh and Oscar and all that have been saying for the last couple months. They listened to Zuffa's side, and this is the newest one. They said the solution here is a better product for fans. The bill will enable UBOs to offer league-style systems, unified rules, rankings, and titles, which we don't think is a good idea. Like, we don't think that we've said that numerous times. Like, the UFC puts out their rankings, they give out the titles, they can manipulate them, they can.
It's just too much power in the same place.
Right. Number two, it gives fighters more control over reliable opportunities. Boxers, this is where I want to get your thoughts. Boxers' first professional promotional agreement is limited to 3 years. Fighters are guaranteed minimum compensation and a 90-day period to negotiate their next contract. The bill also prohibits UBOs from charging ranking and title challenge fees, which is sanctioning fees, creates a firewall between UBOs and boxing managers to prevent conflict of interest, and requires UBOs to schedule fights every 6 months for boxers under contract. So they've limited it from down to 3 years, but the maximum is six.
Yeah, but what is that? So for everyone at home who's never read a boxing contract, you'll sign a 3-year contract, and a 3-year contract is really a 6-year contract. What they'll do is it'll be 3 years unless you get a world ranking, and then they add a year. If you get a world title fight, you add a year, because you don't want to get a guy to a position and then he wins the title right at the end of that 3 years and then you let him go. I just lost my hold over a world champion that I developed for 3 years, that I got them to the point where they can win a world title, and now they're gone. That's not the way it works. So if you get a high ranking, you get a title, there's extensions on the contract. So I didn't see any mention of any extensions on there. Now, is it a hard 3 years? I doubt it. I really doubt it.
Well, that'd be good.
It would be good, but again, like I just said, it wouldn't be good.
The first one, the first bill they rolled out was the six, and they pushed down on that.
Yeah, but again, there's workarounds. You can turn three into six.
That's the whole point, is get rid of the workarounds.
They have to explicitly say that. If they don't, I'm just going to assume it's like any other boxing contract. It's 3 years unless we get you a top 10 ranking. Then it's 4 years unless we get. And then if you had any injury time, then we're adding that to it. It's trolling time. And if you get a world title, we get you for 2 more years. Like, that's usually how it goes. And there'll be add-ons because of, you know, those things.
The Senate bill would limit a fighter's first contract with a UBO to a maximum of 3 years, provided the fighter has not signed a promotional agreement before. After the first contract, fighters can sign deals for up to 6 years. Fighters would be allowed to negotiate new deals 90 days before the expiration of any contract. The House bill would give fighters 30 days.
The only fighters you're getting that have never signed a deal before are going to be the guys who are literally starting from the ground up. Guys usually sign and then fight. They don't fight and then sign.
And John Nash, who's been pretty good, says, what fucking idiot thought this was a win for fighters? I don't know. It's getting muddy, and they got the opposition on their side.
But that's what I mean. They put these extra things in there. The lawyers are smart. They know the workarounds. You're only your first contract. What does that mean? You're only finding 0-0 guys? This is for the league. You're building. This is for the league. You're getting the guys.
It's a coercive contract for the league. And we'll see. We'll see what happens with Ali Walsh. I want to say that he's fighting the good fight. Like, will he end up fighting on Zuffa one day after all of this? Nothing surprises me in this sport at all.
At all.
I'm still holding out skepticism with Ali Walsh. I'm still skeptical because boxing has made me a skeptic. Everything about this sport, I think, what do they want out of this? Like, see Nick Khan at that table, like, what is he thinking? Get the like smirk
talking,
on his face.
Talking about boxing contracts makes me want to go take a shower.
Yeah, I know. I that's not our strong suit. I do want to cover it. Like, having you here is perfect for it because you have signed contracts. You've been on the good side of a contract, bad side of a contract.
I think I've had a lot more. I've had a lot more bad sides than good sides when it comes to boxing contracts.
Man,
I have PTSD from boxing contracts.
Yeah, but moral of the story here is that Zuffa, it didn't pass yet. Like, now this is today. We'll see if this gets through. And because they want to start this league, like Zuffa, Sella, which is Turkey, 60% they own of Zuffa. That's a pretty big number
big
there.
Big
like, they didn't get into this to continue to do what they're doing right now. There's to be a bit player, cross promotions whenever they can. They went in to change the entire sport and be in it for the next.
It's like
forever.
I said from the beginning, this is a 10-year move. You're taking the sport from the bottom up, and you're throwing these big ring cards and fights across the bow, so you don't realize what they're doing underneath. You don't realize that they're scooping up all the future talent. So in 5 to 10 years, when everywhere you look, every fighter who's at the top was signed with Zuffa from the beginning, and now they're here, and you're throwing tons big money at these guys to show that you guys are major players, and we're getting the big names, and people are tuned in. You're signing up. You're involved. You're in, and then next thing you know, they've got everybody.
Change it. Yeah, they got to change everything around. All right. Well, we'll see. Well, I'm gonna watch the fights this weekend because first and foremost, I like the fights.
Contracts, yes, we like the fights. We'd like to talk about fights too. We prefer to talk about fights, not business.
This is big news. This is big stuff. This is the changing the whole entire structure of the sport. I'm looking forward to Lamont Roach versus William Cepeda. It's Saturday night on TNT and DAZN. We'll be locked in for that. We'll have a reaction show on Sunday, and we'll have a great weekend. Chris, what have you got going on this weekend? Are you traveling?
I'm going to the Keys this weekend. I'm taking a drive. So if people don't know, the Keys, when you live in Florida, part of the trip is the trip. The drive. Oh, it's beautiful. They're going over the bridge, and it's just beautiful this time of year. It's also a slow time because it's so hot. no one's flying into Florida in mid-August or in August. So it's usually pretty chill down there. Great food. I'm going to eat so much fresh caught fish. So that's all me doing this weekend. I'm super psyched. Yeah.
That was me in Montauk. Talk about the drive. The drive to Montauk is phenomenal, too. Long Island.
Beautiful.
That was a good one. Had a lot of, what I have, salmon. I had a lot of tuna, some fish tacos. Montauk, it's got it going on. Talking about flying into Florida, I'll be flying into Florida on Tuesday for MVP prospects card. It's going to be sweltering there. Thunderstorms.
It's Orlando?
Yeah.
The swamp of Orlando.
Orlando, where the air
does not move. The air doesn't move in Orlando.
It's going
to
be.
I live close to the water. Our air moves. Orlando doesn't move.
Yeah, I know. I've been there in August before. It's crazy. All right, everyone. Have a great weekend. Protect yourself at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs. We're out.